En mörk oändlig Ingmar.
Welcome to Views from the World Tree. On this week's show, we explore the things that go bump in the night so that you don't have to. We will be discussing how to survive a real-life haunting. And now, on with the show. Before we go into the news, sitting down in the basement of our house, of the house that I live in, that is unfinished, talking about scary haunted stuff, and then hearing my wife and our company upstairs talking through, coming through the vents, it's a little freaky.
Nice.
Not gonna lie.
Yeah, I tried to set the mood too. I've got a fire going in the fireplace, and sadly, I do not have a basement, but we work with what we have.
That's fair.
Well, yes. I see. Good news, everyone.
All right. So for news, I am not really reading anything new. The only thing that has changed in my book rotation is my Sleepy Time book is now Ready Player One because I finished whatever the other one was that I was listening to. I have like three or four that I rotate through for my fall asleep book. And then as far as I'm watching, what I have been watching, first, just a quick bit of news. I saw announced, I don't know when it was actually announced, but I found out about it today. Apparently, Doctor Who will be coming to Disney Plus.
Oh, man, I saw that. with David Tennant returning as well.
Yeah, so apparently Disney... So it's still owned by the BBC, so it's not that Disney is adding to their monopoly. Well, I mean, they are, but not with Doctor Who. They just have exclusive streaming rights in the U.S., so...
I think U.S., Canada, and Mexico, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Probably. I don't really watch TV anywhere other than the U.S. because I don't go anywhere other than the U.S. So,
too poor to travel. I know when I was over in Iceland and England, but it's weird. Disney Plus in Iceland, I got... completely different set of shows, and the Disney Plus in England was more like the American shows, but it was like Hulu and Disney combined onto one platform.
Okay.
So I assume that kind of like over there, Canada and Mexico will get Doctor Who through. At least that's what I read. Sorry. Long story short, I think that's what I read.
That makes sense. Yeah, so that'll be exciting. And then as far as what I actually watched, I found this movie when I was browsing through the top movies on iTunes, on the Apple TV. And so I grabbed it. I checked. It's not streaming anywhere. So you can either buy it on like iTunes or Amazon, I think. But it definitely sounded like one you would be interested in. The movie is called Vesper, and it is a total like dystopian future eco climate crisis cautionary tale film. I want to say I looked it up. I don't remember where it was made. I want to say Bulgaria, but I think that's wrong. Anyway, somewhere over in like Eastern Europe. And the premise is that it's in the future. Earth has faced some type of a climate crisis and the ecology is just totally out of whack. There's all these like weird mutated plants and animals. And so humans kind of survive in these little roving bands. Other than all of the rich, they live in these like big bubble cities called citadels, and all of the because the ecology is so f***ed up, nothing will grow anymore other than these special genetically modified seeds. And the company that has worked out how to make them grow also has engineered them so that they can only be cultivated once. So you can't like regrow from the seeds that, that the plants drop, right? So they're not heirlooms. You only get one generation out of them. And so they control all the seeds, and like seeds are the actual, they're kind of like the currency, because that's all that matters is being able to grow food.
That sounds like such a dystopian. So, wow.
It's really good. The narrative's a little bit slow, which can happen sometimes with foreign films, but the, like the cinematography and just the practical and special effects are just mind blowing. Like it looks like something that this huge studio put together, but it's a fairly independent film. So
nice.
Kudos to whoever did it. It's just beautiful to watch.
I've stumbled across a couple of small studios from smaller nations and have been very impressed with what's been coming out of some of these smaller studios. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. And then as far as actual news, I don't really have a lot this week. It's the run up to the election season here in the US, so all of the candidates are starting to increase both the degree to which and the amount that they suck up to voters. So like Biden's doubling down on promises to cancel student debt and implement gun legislation and all of the things that he promised during the election and never did. He's like, oh, this time I'm actually going to do it. If you vote for me, I'll actually do it this time. Then on the other side, I mean, Republicans are doubling down on their rhetoric about, oh, the Democrats want to end liberty. And so I'm actually kind of avoiding the news right now for that reason. Another couple of weeks and it's going to get to the point where, well, not even a couple of weeks, this week, it's been to the point where I can't even watch like YouTube ads because they're all political ads.
It's ridiculous. It hit here in Colorado probably a month and a half ago. I've had nothing but politics on my advertising feeds for a month and a half now.
Yeah, it's over here in my state. We have this special individual that you might have heard of named Ammon Bundy that's running for governor. And yes, he's of those Bundys, the standoff, armed standoff Bundys. And it's just his ads, man, they're so over the top. It's ridiculous.
That sounds awesome, actually. I might have to look up some of his ads.
You should. They're pretty entertaining. Guy's a whack job.
For those of you that don't know the Bundy family, we are sure to do a podcast episode at some point, hopefully one that pokes fun and not one that commiserates a governorship by such a wackadoo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty staunch libertarian, and that guy claims to be libertarian. He's not. He's like alt-right crazy.
No, he's an authoritarian. He's not libertarian. He doesn't believe in people's liberties.
No, he just likes to jump on that bandwagon. Because it's got momentum, so
yeah.
Anyway, I meant to avoid being political by not bringing up news, and then I went there anyway. So I apologize.
It's fair. It happens.
So anyway, that's pretty much it for what I had this week for news. What about you?
All right. Well, this week, I was looking for one of those sleeping books because, like you, my brain just operates so fast that I need background noise to fall asleep, and sometimes a good book is what I need. Mm-hmm. So I actually found on Audible Plus the complete works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes, and it's a narrated by Stephen Fry. It starts with a study in Scarlet, and it goes into the can't remember what the second half of that book was, where there's some general authorities from the Mormon Church that chase a trapper all the way to England, and the team has to protect him from these Mormon assassins. It's actually kind of funny. Yeah, it's like offensively funny, but it does kind of paint a picture to how people in England in the 1890s felt about the Mormon Church. It's very fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stephen Fry, I'm sure, does a really good job with that.
Oh, he's incredible. He's got such a powerful baritone voice and a great sense of how to develop characters without being over the top with his voice acting. It's just very well done.
Yeah, agreed. I have the what's it called? The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that he narrates, and it's pretty great. He does a really good job with that.
Yeah. I'll have to check that one out. That's another one of those books that I just love, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, it's a good one, and he does a really good job with that.
Nice. Yeah, so I'm listening to that. As far as actually reading, I've been taking a lot of public transportation, and I picked up, for the third time, the Steve Jobs biography that was released around the time that he died. I can't remember the author on it, but it's one of my favorite biographies because it just shows you how influential that man was.
Yeah, I've not read that, but I've heard from people that have read it that it paints a really cool picture of how, like, charismatic and, you know, kind of the guy that could sell ice to an Eskimo, like they say. Hopefully that's not offensive. If it is, I apologize. But yeah, really charismatic individual. Love him or hate him, or love or hate his products. He was really good at salesman and at selling himself too.
Well, it's interesting. The author does not sugarcoat anything. Without saying that Steve Jobs had Asperger's, he basically says that Steve Jobs had Asperger's and would get so bogged down in it was his way or the highway that he was almost inflexible. And a lot of people that worked for him hated him.
Yeah.
But because he had these grand ideas, he'd force people to think outside the box, which is why we have Pixar, which is why we have Apple where it is now, why we have the ability to store music and actually be sitting here talking to you through Apple Podcasts, which I know most of you listen to us through, is because he would see his vision of reality and push people. It was really kind of cool.
Yeah.
Sorry. You didn't want to go political, and I didn't want to go all Apple nerd fanboy.
Yeah, that's all good.
Yeah. So that's reading. As far as watching, I stumbled across on Netflix a TV show that I ended up starting to watch to prepare for tonight called 28 Days. And before we started recording, I kind of asked you about that. You said you hadn't seen it or whatnot.
I don't think so. I mean, yeah, there was one where Sandra Bullock went to rehab, and then there was a zombies one that had similar titles, and those are the only two I've heard of. So,
okay. So this takes some amateur paranormal investigators, and it explores the Warren's theory that haunting cycle over 28 days. That they'll start out benign, and then they'll start to increase in threat and activity, culminating like at an apex at 28 days, and then the cycle will reset. So I can't do horror movies, but I can watch paranormal TV shows like until the cows come home. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I actually enjoy that it was based off of the Warrens, personal research, like whether you believe in the Warrens or not, it's based off of their research of the cycle of paranormal activity.
Yeah, I know we talked about the Warrens. I was trying to remember which episode it was, but we went through basically the different movies that talked about their experiences. And
yeah, we went through their Cinemaverse. I don't know that we actually got into their actual research. We may have touched on it.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, there it is. Season 2, episode 14. So.
So the 14th week of this year.
Yep.
What's that? March? April?
First week in April. Yep.
Okay. There you go. Search for that there. We definitely talked about it, and I was forced to watch a horror movie of which I did not want to watch. It's all right. We'll get Adam back. Maybe I'll have him watch, I don't know. I think you like all the other types of movies that I like, so
there's no threat. Many types of movies I don't like. I'm sure there's some like independent French film or something that I would not be able to stand, but that's probably about it.
And you think that I watch those?
I would think that you don't, but I've been proven wrong before, so.
Well, despite my limited knowledge of the French language, I do not watch those super Art Nouveau films. I don't understand them.
Me neither. Even if they were in English, I would not understand them.
So that's what I was watching to kind of prepare for this. Going back to it, sorry. We are easily distracted today.
Mm-hmm. Squirrel.
The show centers on three teams of paranormal investigators, and they go to three pretty haunted. Sorry, my heater just kicked on again. I don't know if you're picking that up.
It's pretty faint. It's just ambiance.
Okay. Three locations. One in New Hampshire. I can't remember where the second one was, and then one in Denver, Colorado. And it just basically puts these people in and locks them in isolation, supposedly in isolation, for 28 days at a haunted location.
Hmm. Interesting.
So.
Cool.
It's kind of neat. It's also good nap fodder. It's a great way to turn something on, close your eyes, and wake up a couple episodes later.
Yeah. Nice.
So. Yeah. And then as far as news, I was kind of looking around, and I know you and I have both expressed a desire at some point in our lives to write a novel or write a book of some sort. I found a story about a kid, a 16-year-old, who during the COVID lockdowns in the UK got so sick of how much time he was spending playing PlayStation that he actually wrote his first novel called Noble, Betrayed. And he wrote it in 9 months, self-published it, and people all over the world have started to buy it. So he's actually starting to earn a little bit of money from this passion project of not playing video games.
Nice. Good for him.
Yep.
He's got both more time and more dedication than I do, so.
Right. It's really impressive to me. I've gotten, when I've been trying to write in the past, I've gotten to probably about halfway through the research phase and went, oh my gosh, I just can't keep the story straight. I'm tired of researching it. I'm bored. Time to move on. So for this 16-year-old kid to just sit down and in 9 months go, all right, I'm gonna hammer this out. It's really impressive.
Yeah, very impressive.
So if you're interested in getting this book, I guess it's inspired by Dylan's favorite authors, which would be George R. R. Martin, J.R.R. Tolkien, and Andrzej Sapkowski, who was the author of The Witcher.
Okay.
So he's choosing some great heroes.
He is, although I do take a slight issue with his ordering of that list, just as a huge Tolkien fan, but that's all right.
You know what, though? I mean,
he's of a younger generation, so.
I was going to say, at 16 years old, Martin's hot right now. Tolkien. Yeah. Tolkien's the old guy that kind of the grandfather of the genre.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah. So that's my news. Sorry, that was kind of a long, drawn out, random talking tonight.
It's all good. We're very light on notes this week, so. Not a problem.
All right. So tonight's main topic is how to survive a haunting. And when we were discussing this, we were kind of hemming and hawing. How's that say?
Yeah, hemming and hawing.
Okay, I said that right. Nice.
That's right.
We'll pretend like it is. about how serious or tongue-in-cheek this should be. So I feel like we kind of did a combination.
Sure.
Maybe. I don't know. But as far as hauntings go, where do you get all your information?
My knowledge kind of comes from two really different sources. Like, I've always been a fan of like the classic supernatural, paranormal literature. So I'm a huge fan of Lovecraft, which we did a special on him last October, I think. And like, just the classic Dracula and stuff like that. But then also I have watched a lot of Supernatural because it's like one of those comfort shows. I'm one of those people that likes to rewatch TV series. I don't know why, but, and that's one of those comfort shows. Like, it's got some good story arcs. It has a little bit of weirdness sometimes when they kill off the big bad, but then they're like, oh, we're still popular, we should keep making seasons. So and there's a lot of it to watch, and it's always on Netflix. Like, I think it's been available forever.
I think so too. It feels like it's one of Netflix's staples.
Yeah, it's one of the few that like doesn't come and go. It's always there. So I would say those are kind of my sources.
All right. So from these sources of classic literature and Supernatural, how do you stay survived?
Well, so if you're talking like Lovecraft stuff, then you don't, right? That's the whole point of like the Eldritch horror, is there's nothing you can do. Everything is fucked. Pardon my French. That's the world's ending, and you just have to embrace it. Worship the old gods.
That's fair. But that's more of an alien infestation. That's less haunting.
Yeah, much more cosmic scale, right?
So, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's stuff that is kind of the classic, you know, vampires supposedly crosses, which I seriously doubt do anything. Garlic, right? Silver bullets for werewolves. Iron for like ghosts and stuff. So every monster supposedly has some kind of an Achilles heel.
Intriguing. I always think of when I think of Supernatural, I always think of rock salt. Whenever Sam and Dean are like in a hard part, like, oh no, the baddie's going to kill the town. A shotgun shell full of rock salt like gets them out of the way.
Yep. It's phenomenal. And they always like block off the windows and the doors with the salt.
Oh, that's right.
Or when the hellhound's coming, they have like the circle that they put the victim in.
I remember that episode. That was a good one. Yeah, I mean, so maybe salt. I know in the Bible and stuff, salt was considered like one of those spices that was so pure that it wasn't really able to be described. Like, do you think that has something to do with the salt idea?
Maybe. That's a good question.
I mean, I have no idea where it came from. I'm just asking.
Yeah, you know, I've never really thought about that, but now that you mention it, I don't think I have any idea where that came from either.
Yeah, I mean, you spill salt, you're supposed to throw some over your shoulder.
Yeah, and Lot's wife was turned into a pillar of salt, but
yeah,
I don't know I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Just, I know in Shintoism, salt is one of the elements, and so it's something that you leave for the land spirits outside of your house. You leave them offerings of salt to help protect your abode. It's just interesting, like looking at this idea of salt being kind of a holy symptom, a holy substance.
Yeah, it's. And I might be showing my lack of knowledge here, but do you know if that's a thing outside of the, whatever they call it, the supernatural verse or whatever that universe is called?
The idea that salt repels evil spirits?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
did Supernatural create that, or was that around before? I honestly don't know, but. The other thing I know, when they are, when there's a ghost that they're trying to get to, like, move on and release their, whatever it is they're haunting, they'll salt the bones, the person's bones, and then burn them. So it's involved in a couple different ways in that show, but I'm not exactly sure what the explanation or the reason behind it is.
Yeah. Let's see. According to Medium, it looks like salt is often used in divination. Hmm. And it protects you from evil spirits because it's a preservative. So it makes it like opposite in nature to demons, who will apparently like try to steal your energy. So salt will preserve your energy.
Okay.
It looks like in ancient times, people used to salt the coffins, salt their like deceased ones' coffins, to protect their soul from returning to the planet. So maybe using salt. I mean, it looks like it goes back. According to this article, it looks like it's been used since the Bavarian kingdom, so even pre-Austro-Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
So
according to this website that I'm seeing, they surmise that the use of salt, and actually a lot of the stuff in Supernatural, including salt and iron, were like the way they use it in the show was lifted almost exactly from the way that it's used by Wiccans. So specifically, Wiccans will create a circle of salt around an area that they want to protect and prevent negative entities and demons from crossing into it. Hmm. And it even goes so far as to say, when you're participating in Wiccan rituals or incantations, you should make a line of salt along the door and the windowsill to protect yourself. While you're doing these rituals, you're kind of like making yourself vulnerable and opening yourself up to whatever is there. So it's a good way to protect yourself from outside influence, which is exactly what they do in the show, right? Along the windowsill and under the door. So
interesting.
Yeah. Kind of cool.
There you go. Salt.
Maybe that's why all the Mormons settled in Salt Lake Valley, because it was holy.
There you go. Kept the demons at bay.
Something.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
No worries. As far as iron, like we were discussing iron with the show. I know in Celtic mythology, nature spirits can't touch iron because it's not natural. It like burns them in a way. I'm wondering if that is where they got the idea that demons or spirits can't possess or touch iron. I don't know. Now I'm going out on a limb.
I'm not sure on that one. I know iron does occur in nature, right? It's an element. It's a base element. So,
right.
But yeah, I mean, I've heard the same thing. Spirits can't cross iron. And then in the show, you know, iron is able to disperse like the form of a ghost, the spiritual form. So they temporarily lose the ability to hold a form and just kind of disperse into, you know, vapor or whatever. But I'm sure somebody out there on the internet knows a lot more than we do about this.
Oh yeah. I feel like we're kind of, we're, if you couldn't tell, tonight's episode is kind of a, anything goes discussion on hauntings. So if you do have, more information, feel free to, email us, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on hauntings on this.
This theory, oh, this is interesting. I like this theory. This is from Supernatural Wiki. So when Sam and Dean are hunting for ghosts, they will look for EMF, so electromagnetic like frequencies interference. And so this person posits that that's because ghosts use electromagnetic energy to kind of contain their form, and a piece of iron being a, you know, a strong conductor would disrupt their ability to do that. It interferes with the electromagnetic field.
That's actually a really interesting idea. Yeah.
So, yeah, it prevents the ghost's ability to use EM energy to manifest.
I could see that actually being quasi-realistic too. Yeah. As far as hauntings go. Trying to think anything else from the Supernatural series that would repel ghosts.
Ghosts, I don't remember that there's anything else. I know they have some tricks for dealing with demons. But I think that's... with ghosts, that was about it.
All right.
If I remember right.
So as far as my knowledge, kind of, if you stuck through the news and heard the paranormal TV, you'll know that that's one of my go-tos. So a lot of my information actually comes from ghost hunters. And what's that one with Zach Bagans?
I don't know.
It's on Travel Channel now, Paranormal Network, I guess. Ghost Adventures. So a lot of my knowledge comes from that. But as you had mentioned EMF, and that's something that real life ghost hunters, I guess, use to find spirits, as they use these electromagnetic field readers to try and find abnormalities in EMF. And that's one of the theories about how you can spot them. So I just thought that was interesting, especially since it's used in this pseudoscience of ghost hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, before we get too far into the fake stuff, before I assume, where do you come from? What are your thoughts on ghosts? Do you believe in them? Do you believe in hauntings?
I would say of all of the like supernatural or conspiracy type stuff we cover on this podcast, ghosts and spirits are probably, in my opinion, the least outlandish thing. I think that I'm not super religious, but I am pretty spiritual. I think that every being, every person, every human, every animal, every plant has some type of energy, and that energy goes somewhere when we die. I don't know if it stays here. I don't know if it goes and gets collected somewhere, but I think, I would say plausible, maybe even likely, that there's some type of ghosts or spirits hanging out around here, and we just are not able to see them.
I think I agree. So I'm going to stop saying supposedly and say that this is what people have found, because I feel the same way. I don't know that I've actually had any supernatural experiences, but I feel like there's too many anecdotes from history and from cultures all over the world that have had ghost activity that has been at least written about for it there not to be something here.
I mean, it's like you said, it's every culture, every country, every state in the U.S. right, every people around the world have people that have claimed to have seen, spoken with, interacted with spirits of some type. So I mean, I definitely would say probably can't believe everybody that says that they've seen a ghost. I think some people make up stories for attention. I think some people work themselves up in a frenzy. I think some people suffer from dissociative mental disorders. But even throwing all of that aside, I think there's still way too much evidence for this to be not possible.
Yeah. Completely agree on that. So I found a site from Xemplore, which basically has listed out the six main types of hauntings.
Okay.
And if you watch any of the paranormal reality TV shows, or even things like Supernatural, I think even touched on this a little bit. And I know you're a big horror movie buff. The Conjuring series kind of talked about this with the Warrens, mm-hmm. and their stuff. So the very first type is called a residual haunting. And this type of haunting is it's like history on repeat. If you watch Ghost Hunters, the guys on the TAPS team, they basically say it's like an imprint of some sort of event. And they speculate that the event is going to be highly emotionally charged to leave this imprint. So like the pictures of soldiers in Gettysburg, or if you go to any of the battleships and see maybe a soldier walking the hallways of an old battleship or something like that. It's like a movie that's being played that sometimes people can see. That's the idea of a residual haunting.
Okay.
So, some of the evidence that people have are the sound of footsteps without anybody being there, doors opening and closing, sometimes voices caught through sound recorders that are having a conversation with each other, but they're not aware of the living around them. So things like that are believed to be residual.
Okay. Yeah, just quickly scanning over the other five, I would say a residual haunting probably, at least in my opinion, seems the most likely to be real. Like you had mentioned, you have these moments in people's lives or histories that are very highly emotionally charged. And in a lot of times that would be, you know, some type of like a violent death or something. And I think that type of, you know, highly charged emotion, that's going to leave some type of imprint behind. And people that are sensitive to that, I think it's absolutely possible that they could pick up on some of that in some form.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching the TV show Secrets of the Abandoned or something like that. It's on Discovery Networks. And they were at a hospital down in South Africa, this abandoned hospital. And the narrator actually said that the place that they were looking at and kind of talking about the history, it was one of the supposedly most haunted places in the world. And the narrator actually said there's a lot of theories that hospitals tend to become haunted because there's a lot of births there and a lot of deaths there, which are two things that cause a lot of emotion in people. And so the idea of hospitals being haunted seems realistic to me just because of the amount of emotion surrounding those two life experiences.
Mm-hmm. There's been one place that I've been to that I would say maybe fits into this. I didn't see anything visually. But I, so there's a, an old penitentiary here in Idaho in Boise that you can go and it's open to the public to take tours. And it was mostly active in like the, from the 50s to the 70s. And so they take you on the tour through all the different cell blocks. And then at the end, they're like, okay, if any of you are here with kids, or if you're like sensitive to, you know, violence type of stuff, like this is where your tour ends. And then the last stop for everybody else is the gallows, where they actually have, over the years, I think they said like six people were executed there. And it's a two-story building, and there's like the beam and the noose that they would put around the inmate's neck. And then there's a trap door, where they would pull the lever and the person would fall and drop like 8 or 9 or 10 feet until the rope caught. And then they would, be executed down under in that lower room. And so everybody that's watching the execution would be in the upper room behind the window. They would see the person fall through the trap door, and then that's all they would see. On the tour, you get to go down into the room where they actually expired. And when I tell you, like, you would go in there and it was just this like eerie feeling, just like somebody had thrown a wet blanket over your soul. Like, it's the only way I can describe it. It was just, I swear it was like 10 degrees colder in that room. It's above ground still, same building. And just like, you could feel there was something going on in that room.
Interesting.
So, it was creepy. And it was the middle of the day when we went. So it's not like it was spooky nighttime stuff. All the lights in there are on, you know. But yeah, there was definitely like some type of presence that was like seriously pissed off.
So fair. So yeah.
Yeah, would definitely recommend it if anybody ever makes it out to Boise. It's cool to see the old penitentiary, and if you're into, you know, anything paranormal, definitely make sure you go through the full tour. If they still do it, I don't know if they still do.
I bet they do. It's paranormal stuff is hot right now. I mean, that's why the Travel Channel is basically the paranormal network right now here in the United States. It used to show you beaches and museums, and now it shows you people exploring haunted places, just because there is that desire, right? So yeah. I would bet that it's still open. In fact, I'm already very excited to go and visit it with you when I come out there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So anyway, didn't mean to derail with a tangent, but I felt like it was applicable.
No, I don't think there's any derailing tonight. I feel like tonight is just a series of information filled with anecdotes. The second type of haunting, according to this site, is poltergeist activity. They label this as a residual haunting because they believe that because whatever's causing poltergeist type activity is not a human spirit. They believe that it's like a transfer of energy from a living being into kind of the spiritual world, if you will. And so they believe that this is why poltergeists tend to attach themselves to a person. If you go on any internet forums, 9 times out of 10, it's prepubescent girls and teenage girls that tend to be haunted by poltergeists. But some of the things that poltergeists apparently do is like, this will be the the throwing of plates across the room, slamming cupboards, opening cupboards, things that don't necessarily cause direct harm to a person, but are used to intimidate or to scare the person. So this site says that it's a type of residual haunting where a living person's controlling the energy. I've seen on some of the TV shows that I watch, people just believing it's like a, almost like a trickster spirit, like a trickster type of being, sprite, leprechaun type of thing that basically uses poltergeist type activity to intimidate or confuse the living type of thing. Yeah. So,
yeah, definitely a popular one in like movies and TV shows for sure.
Yeah.
Always, I mean, it seems like there's always the family that moves in and like, you know, cupboards start slamming and the clock starts going crazy and furniture gets thrown across the room.
It's a great trope, but I don't know. I think that's all it is. It's just a trope.
Yeah, I don't know. It does seem kind of weird that somebody that, like, some spirit would intentionally do this kind of stuff. I could buy it more, like you have this bullet point that just a misdirection of energy, like something happened at some location and some energy got attached to a place, right? And there wasn't enough of it that could actually be a spirit themselves controlling stuff. So maybe it's just somebody's residual energy or soul or whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I have Wi-Fi problems. Maybe I have a poltergeist that is surfing the airwaves.
I've got a personal theory on this one. There's in some Eastern thoughts, there's this idea that if you believe something hard enough, that you can make it manifest into reality. So like there's this idea of a Buddhist monk, a Buddhist teacher who locked himself into a cave and through the power of meditation sprouted staghorns. And then he was able to think them out of existence, manifest them out of existence before he came out of the cave, basically talking about the power of the human mind. My theory is that you get some people, some kids usually, who at a slumber party or whatnot are playing with a Ouija board or some other conjuring type of device. And somebody in that group maybe believes so strongly that something is making contact with them that they manifest misdirected energy around them. Yeah. That's my theory.
I could definitely see that. I don't know if you remember this episode. I know we've been talking about Supernatural a lot, but that's okay. there was one where, so they called the monster a tulpa, T-U-L-P-A. and they specifically said that it was a Tibetan concept from Tibetan monks. That a tulpa was some type of being that initially starts in somebody's imagination, but like the more people that believe in it, the more real it becomes until it actually becomes tangible. And just like you said, there was like a group of teens that were at this supposed haunted cabin, and they would tell ghost stories about this this farmer that like murdered his family or whatever. And to try and like scare each other, they ended up painting these sigils on the wall that they had found in some book. And it turned out that the symbols were actual Tibetan symbols. And so all of them like focusing on that idea in that heightened state of emotion with these Tibetan sigils actually created this, this actual tangible monster.
That's interesting. I quasi remember that episode, but yeah, maybe that's all poltergeists are, is people conjuring tulpas.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
So our third type of haunting is your intelligent haunts. And this is what the paranormal reality TV show, like what they strive for, is finding intelligent hauntings. Also called active hauntings. These can be frightening if you've experienced them. I have not. The author apparently has, but these are the type of hauntings where a spirit knows that they don't possess a physical body, are aware that they don't, yet still are doing things to try to communicate with the living. So this is where you're I can't remember the name of the where you get a voice recorder, where you get a voice that wasn't there, type of thing. EMPs, I think. It's also where you get manipulation of objects. You get spirits trying to communicate through other means. If you were into a haunted TV series, they usually will write messages for you in the fog on your mirror after a shower, that type of thing.
Yeah. This would be like the actual movie Ghost, right? Where Patrick Swayze is dead and is trying to communicate with people.
Yeah, I feel like that would be an intelligent haunting. I think it would also be like the movie The Conjuring, where the witch that started the entire thing basically is trying to scare people off because she doesn't want them there.
Yeah.
Type of thing. So I guess you could have the benign Patrick Swayze ghost or the angry witch ghost.
Yeah, I know which one I would pick.
The angry witch ghost? Me too, man.
Right? Yeah. Who wants to, like, do pottery on a pottery wheel?
I don't know. I did have a major crush on Demi Moore, though.
I think everybody did back in the early 90s. It was hard not to.
Right.
Anywho,
this one I actually do kind of give credence to, though, in all honesty. There's, if you go to like paranormal websites, there's so many like out of body recordings and videos and things that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that all of them are doctored. I actually do believe that there is evidence of intelligent haunts from here, from this type of thing. So even though I haven't experienced it, I actually do kind of believe that there could be intelligent spirits.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I had like a hope for any of these to be real, it would probably be this. Because I, like, yeah, we poke fun at the Patrick Swayze thing, right? But, I mean, I have, like, family members and ancestors that have passed away. And it's kind of comforting to think that they might, like, you know, check in on you every once in a while. And a lot of cultures have these, like, practices where you'll go out and try and commune with your ancestors. You know, you'll sit by their grave or sit at a burial mound and do this like this utiseta, right? This sitting out where you try and commune with your ancestors and get like advice and guidance from them. And so it's just kind of a cool idea. Like I would be really, really happy if this was a real thing. So, and well, maybe it is. I kind of hope it is.
Isn't that kind of the idea behind Samhain or Dia de los Muertos or
yeah
any of the other ones? Like the veil between the spirit world and the living world is so thin during this season that the possibility of actually encountering a relative coming back and being able to commune with them is a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, the Old Norse would go so far, and actually a lot of cultures, I just speaking to that because that's what I know best, would go so far as to set an extra place of food at the table for whatever, you know, ancestral spirit might come and visit during that time. So,
yeah, the tribes down in Mexico, they leave food out during Dia de los Muertos, during those 2 days, so that their family members can come and have a place to eat, right? They have the death cakes and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Death bread. What is it called?
I don't remember.
Pan
is bread, so
I think it's death bread. Like they basically make it look like a skull. Mm-hmm. I can't remember its I can't remember its name though. Anyway, yeah, I mean it's definitely cultural. I know the Celtic tribes with Samhain did something similar. They'd leave offerings out for their family members during this time as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. The fourth type is the doppelganger. Doppelganger comes from the German word double walker.
I did not know that. And
what's that?
I did not know that.
I didn't either. So this one I rolled my eyes at as I was reading it, but this is basically the idea of a evil spirit that has taken on your form for some reason, and they're seen as harbingers. Definitely a bad thing to see somebody that looks exactly like you. And it's actually where this idea of the evil twin comes from, like your doppelganger, the spiritual being that's taken on your form is doing evil things to mess up your life type of thing.
Okay. This one, I don't know, like, of all of these, I think this would probably freak me out the most if I'm actually taking the time to think about it and being completely honest. Like, I mean, it's a trope in like science fiction, right? The fact that if you went back in time and were seen by your past self, like it would be so traumatic and so crazy that your past self like would not be able to handle it. And I just have to think, like, you know, like there's the door to my office is like right here. So if like I walked through the door to my office, that would really mess me up.
Right.
That would just be, I mean, ghosts, demons, whatever. Like it's, I don't know. I'm a trigger happy Idahoan. I'm sure I would probably just try and shoot it. Like, I don't know that I could deal with it if I walked through the door and, like, yeah, That would seriously mess me up.
That would be freaky. I completely agree. Like looking at this idea of looking at yourself. Yeah, I think I would react very similarly.
It's just like, I mean, you talk about the fight, flight, or freeze response. And I mean, I've been in some situations. I tend to have a fight response. And, you know, in some of the like weird situations you dream up in your head, like there's some things that I would run from for sure. You know, if I'm out hunting and I come across a moose, I'm definitely not going to try and fight a moose. But I mean, this is one thing that I would just freeze and not know what to do. I think my brain would probably melt. I'd probably just snap and go crazy, like claw out my own eyes or something.
Well, I mean, maybe that's why this old Germanic myth of the doppelganger has become a supposed type of haunting.
Probably.
I mean, not to get too psychological. Oh, sorry, go.
I just was going to say, on the surface, it seems silly, right? Because we see it happen in movies and stuff. Oh, you go back in time and you meet yourself. But if you actually stop to think about it, this one is kind of the scariest, at least in my opinion. So, sorry, what were you saying?
I was just thinking, like, psychologically speaking, sometimes our biggest critics are ourselves. We fear more letting ourselves down. And maybe this idea of confronting yourself in a physical form is so scary because we as humans, like, we really have a hard time accepting ourselves as who we are. And so actually being forced to see ourselves as others see us would just be devastating. Not to get too deep, but I mean, that's one of the only reasons I could think of why this would why it freaks me out so much.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very, very Jungian of you to bring that up. But
I mean, it
makes sense.
I like Jung a lot more than I liked Freud, but
most people do. Freud was
An
interesting guy.
It is interesting. It does remind me of the Supernatural episode, going back to Supernatural, where they were dealing with a skinwalker who was wearing people's skins to become a serial killer. Kind of doppelganger-like on that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Our fifth type of haunting are demonic hauntings. Demons tend to be described as evil energy from an unknown source that is unrelated to any human form. Many believe that they come from the devil. Every culture has some sort of demon in it, from like the Hindu, there's Hindu dark beings that basically cause havoc on people. In Shinto, demons, there's a whole theater based on like dark and light spirits from the Shinto religion. Taoism, you can't have shadow without light, you can't, like, that type of thing. And so kind of like ghosts in general, I feel like every culture around the world has demonic presences.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, as far as these, people think that the devil sent them, they tend to be able to change shape and form, tend to take on animalistic characteristics, and they're thought to come from gateways or from conjuration. So people, kind of like the poltergeist that we were talking about, where people believe something into existence, they believe that these demons may actually be pulled into existence from another plane through belief. So yeah, I don't know what else to add on demons, except they seem scary.
Yes. I mean, if you're talking about, because we talked about like salt and iron and stuff, if you're talking about the Christian idea of a demon, then there's not a lot you can do other than like, according to Supernatural, there's sigils and things. There's the demon trap that you could paint, where if a demon steps in it, they'll be trapped. There's the anti-possession tattoos that Sam and Dean have, so they can't be possessed. I think that's really about it. Like, other than that, it's just kind of like punching and stabbing with a magic knife or a magic revolver made by Samuel Colt. So,
right. One of the first demon hunters.
Yes.
At least on American soil. I know the Bible talks about Jesus casting demons out of people. And I know some churches believe in the power of exorcism. Mr. Warren, who basically created this whole idea of paranormal investigation, he was a demonologist and a exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like outside of casting the demon out or the devil out of whatever, there doesn't really appear to be anything.
Yeah, at least, I mean, not in the Christian mythology. You start to look at some of these other belief systems and what they have as a demon equivalent. And it gets a little bit more interesting, but at least in Christianity, it's can't really do a whole lot. Kind of SOL.
Yeah. I don't know. It is interesting. If I had a chance, I'd love to sit down with a demonologist and actually just sit and like ask them questions. So if any demonologists are listening, I would come be a guest on our show, please, because it would be fascinating just to hear about actual research that you've done and training that you've gone through to get it. So,
yep.
I don't know enough to really talk one way or another. And then our last type of haunting is called a shadow haunting. This is a subcategory of demonic hauntings. Tends to be a shadow person that appears. They tend to be almost blocky, bigger than life type of thing. They're supposedly like bad omens, bad things happen to people that have seen shadow people, that type of thing. So as far as this goes, I don't know. It seems like whoever wrote this article went, I'm just going to throw this in because I need a round number.
It's definitely more abstract than the others.
Yeah. So, now a little bit of tongue in cheek and fun with it. Okay. So we're going to do the actual, how do you survive a real haunted house? This is another blog that I found, and I thought it was so funny. I wanted to share and get your thoughts on it.
Okay.
So, rule number one, don't visit a real haunted house alone.
Fair enough.
So, the author of this basically says you may think of yourself as Mr. or Mrs. Macho, but it's a lot easier to survive if you divert attention away from yourself onto a compatriot or companion.
Mm-hmm.
Rule number two, don't separate the party. This is a D&D rule that also apparently applies to hauntings.
Never split the party. Yep.
There's strengths in numbers. So you don't want to dilute your power by splitting the party. Closely related to rule number two is rule number three, which is don't sleep in separate rooms. It goes on in this little rule to say, why would you want to sleep in a haunted house anyway? But if you do choose to go and sleep, don't split the party. Rule number four, ditch the high heels. It's hard to run away in high heels.
Yeah, true.
So, Adam, ditch those 3-inch stilettos, man.
Oh, man, but they make my legs look so good.
I get it, but you safety.
Yeah.
Safety over your style. Rule number five. Don't answer that knock at the door.
That's where it always goes downhill, right?
Yeah. There's never anyone or anything good that happens from opening a locked or a shut door in the middle of the night in a haunted house.
True.
Closely related, rule number six, don't investigate strange sounds. If you're in a haunted house, there's no baby crying. There's no wolves that are howling. There's no creaking floors that are caused by anything good. In fact, if you hear those sounds, you should probably move away. And again, if you followed rule number two of not splitting the party, you know that nobody living is making those sounds. Rule number seven, close and lock all the doors before you settle in for the night. So close and lock all outside doors and windows so things outside can't get in, and open all interior doors so that you don't have to open any doors to find bad things hiding behind them. After you've opened all the interior doors, don't ever go to the basement. Visions of hell don't often start in large fluffy white clouds on the ceiling. Things that are haunt usually stay in the basement. Next rule, same thing goes for the attic. Don't go to the attic. No reason. Never, ever answer that phone call.
Especially if it's coming from inside the house.
Right. Don't fall asleep with the TV on. In fact, if you ever see static on the TV, that's a thing of the past. Modern TVs don't have static. If you see static, run away.
Yeah.
If you didn't follow rule number two and you did split the party, be wary of any friends that have come back. Don't look in the mirrors. This can be overlooked, but remember, spirits can attach to mirrors, and if you don't see them, they won't hurt you. But if you look in the mirror and you see it, it could hurt you.
Oh yeah. Warehouse 13 and Alice. Oh man. Just cover all the mirrors from the beginning.
Yep. As you're going through your investigation, don't ever be in the back of the group. Bad things happen to the person in the back. And keep your cell phone charged. You're the idiot that decided to stay in a haunted house. At least be smart enough to call for help if you need it.
Love it. It's a good list.
I came across that as I was doing research and I went, this is too good not to share.
A lot of good things.
So, I don't know. Anything else to add to the how to survive a haunted house?
I'm trying to think how else people die. I think that just about covers it. If you're the hot bimbo, don't run upstairs, run out the front door.
Oh my gosh, that's my favorite Geico commercial. Why don't we just take the car? No, let's hide behind this wall of, what was it? Swords or machetes or something.
Yeah. Yep. Good stuff.
I had fun with this one. A little tongue-in-cheek at the end, but still fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right. So this week we don't have a mindfulness moment for you all, but just wanted to wish everybody a very happy Halloween, Samhain, Dia de los Muertos, whatever you celebrate during this season. I hope it is a wonderful one for you and you have lots of fun. If you're a young child or if you have young children, enjoy your candy.
Yeah, and be safe out there when you're walking around at night.
Don't fall to the group back of the group. And never split the party.
I was thinking more like carry a flashlight so you don't get hit by a car. But
oh, right. realistic advice. Pah. Cool. What are we doing next week, Adam?
Well, our list of episode ideas is dwindling. We decided next week we would tackle one that's been on there for a little bit, which is fishing. So we've done a lot of prepping episodes, a lot of conspiracy episodes. We wanted to do something outdoors, something easy, lighthearted. So talk about different types of fishing, where you can go to find fish, different tips and tricks. And Steve promised to give us some insider biologist information about where to find fish.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, we'll see you then.
All right.